Hello and welcome to Back Market Podcast. This is episode 77. My name is Raj.
My name is Braden.
How you doing, Braden?
I'm doing well. 77 is one of my lucky numbers.
Is it really?
Yeah. Oh, I like sevens, and there's two of them, so it's double my lucky number.
Isn't that Bottas's number?
Yes. Or he's 40. No, he's not 44.
No, that's Hamilton.
He's 30.
Pretty sure he's 77.
77? Yeah, no. There's a lot of double up numbers, like 33, 44, 77, around the grid. Yeah, you might be right. And I like Bottas. Anyway, this has been a very relaxed intro about numbers.
So, yes, let's talk about what we're going to be doing this week.
And what we've done.
And what we've done, exactly.
It'll already say it in the title, but we have just had a chat with, I'm going to say it, my new favorite representative of Supercars.
She was always my favorite. She was my favorite first.
Okay, fair enough. You can have it first, but she's now mine as well. We have my favorite interview that we've done of all time,
I think.
Amazing. She's such a great person to chat with. We chatted to Betty Klemenko at the end of this show. Stick around because we will be... there is a good chat. That's all I'm going to say. She's wonderful. A massive kind of, I don't know, feather in the hat of supercars.
Yeah.
As well as, like, you know, our new favorite person.
And yeah, for once, she was making us laugh more than the other way around.
It was feels good. We're not, exactly.
Yeah, the two apparent comedians being made to laugh. It was a good thing.
Yeah, stick around. That'll be at the end of the show. But of course, we have a whole lot of Formula One and motorsport news for the week, which we'll be doing in just a moment. And we also have the lead up preview to the 1,000th Formula One Grand Prix. The Chinese Grand Prix.
In China.
Okay. Raj, let's get straight into the news before you do any more voices.
Just because it pisses Braden off.
I'm going to do the first story.
Sure.
And I'm going to do a good one about Williams. It finally happened after months. We have a story about Williams that isn't just miserable sadness.
What?
Did you know that the earnings for Williams is actually slightly up in 2018, despite their very poor performance?
Yeah,
slightly, they are, you know, you'd almost expect to see a story like, you know, Williams in extreme dire financial, you know, issues. They have actually reported a very, very slight gain on their financial results of 2018, moving from $125.6 million for the Formula One team up to $130.7 million. This is pounds, by the way. Which, you know, gives a remaining about $16 million increase. There is also a slight increase in the Williams non-F1 division, like the Williams Advanced Engineering division, so slight. So as much as Williams are not in a good way, it is good to see that at least, you know, the bank balance is at least holding steady, I will say.
So, oh God, I'll just say it. While they're losing races, at least they're making money.
Well, I mean, I think they're still not making as much money as they need to be really turning this around, but at least it's better than reporting a story like they're bankrupt.
Most F1 teams are not profit. It's a loss-making exercise for most people. So the fact that they're making a profit is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, actually, this is revenue, not profit necessarily.
Ooh.
So we don't actually know too much more. But yeah, that does go in that old saying, if you want to make a small fortune in Formula One, you just start with a really big fortune and then buy a Formula One team.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the way to make money.
Yeah.
But again, I'm just clinging on to anything that's vaguely positive for Williams, and I'm leading the show with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Moving on.
So George Russell is adamant that Williams his F1 career. Won't damage his F1 career.
He just set the fastest time of the tests
in the Mercedes.
But, I mean, yes, he still has some talent that is shining through.
Yeah.
In a bad situation.
For sure he does. And also, he says that the Formula One team's struggles will not hurt his career prospects because close observers from Mercedes know that he's performing really well. So, in other words, the people who mean anything know that he's performing well. And so
he's been in that family of a long time. Like, Mercedes aren't just going to be like, all right, well, that was a failure. Pew, off you go. I mean, they've put a lot of investment into that guy's career. They want to see it. They want to see some return on that.
Yeah, they do. I can imagine why George Russell is basically saying the very polite English version of, yeah, well, The people who matter don't agree, so jog on, essentially. He worded it slightly better than that. He said, nobody realizes in the outside world, but the people who will make a difference in my career moving forward They know exactly how my performance is, and they are keeping a close eye on that. They are pleased with that, and that's great for me.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Fair Simple, enough. But fair enough.
I don't mind George Russell. We don't see much of him on a race weekend because he's, you know, not all that interesting for the media to report on the absolute back marker. But, I mean, I'd like to see more of him in the week-by-week coverage.
Indeed. And then, actually, he, as we said, he did a test in the Mercedes. So he topped on the last day of testing. He was actually at the top.
Mm.
And Mercedes chief race engineer Andrew Shovlin said, "It's been great to have George back in the car, and many thanks to Williams for allowing it. He did an excellent job, but the way he goes about testing and his consistency and feedback would make you think that he has a couple of seasons of F1 under his belt, not two races." So
fair enough, yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Moving on. A very small story here coming out of Red Bull. Apparently, Chief Advisor Helmut Marko advises on a lot more than just drivers. He actually advises very heavily on the helmets. Helmets, I will call them.
Of course.
It's just an excuse to say helmets.
Yeah.
Did you know that, yeah, all of the Red Bull team mandates that their drivers use a specific helmet manufacturer in Arari? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
I think you are.
I think so. Everyone except Max Verstappen. You're looking at me like you didn't know this. Max Verstappen has actually had some concerns with this helmet, complaining he's very uncomfortable wearing it, doesn't fit his head right, and they're actually going against their rules, which, you know, incorporate the Arai helmet, which is all part of their aero design. They actually take that into account. And he is now moving on to a different manufacturer because of his weird head. I didn't know. Do you think all teams would have this kind of, you know, strict manufacturer policy on helmets for aero reasons? Or is this really just Red Bull's obsession with aero?
I think Red Bull has their particular relationship, and I think other teams would have their particular relationships with their manufacturers.
Mm.
So at the end of the day, he might have to wear a Mercedes helmet in a Red Bull car. Who the hell knows?
Well, he's wearing a Schuberth helmet. It's going to have the same design and everything in terms of aesthetically, but it will have different aero kind of
characteristics.
Exactly. Yep. Hopefully we don't see too many major, there shouldn't be anything majorly wrong with that, but you know, if your head doesn't fit in the helmet, what else can you do?
Yeah, nothing really. Anyway, Ferrari's come out and revealed an unprecedented cause of the problem that caused Leclerc's F1 engine to somewhat expire. In Bahrain?
Issues.
The
have issues. Yes. I saw this.
Explain them. Okay. So Ferrari has revealed that an unprecedented short circuit with the control systems of its Formula One engine was the cause of Charles Leclerc's problems in the Bahrain Grand Prix. Basically, the computer broke. The computer that controls, sure. Obviously, yeah, yeah.
So it thought it was down on power that it actually might have had, should he had a way to enable it. Is that what I'm getting at? Like, in terms of, like, the short circuit caused the controls to actually mess up, or it actually caused that lack of power? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it caused some sort of issue, whether that was the actual cylinder to stop moving entirely, which is what happened.
I'm just thinking, was the engine all fine? Everything's in the back end. He just can't activate the button that uses it kind of thing.
Well, basically, the statement from the team this week was, this type of problem has never been seen before on the component in question. And Ferrari's confident that the engine can return to action, that it intends to fit the power unit to the car for the Chinese Grand Prix this weekend.
Okay, so if that is the case, then we should see a fairly dominant Ferrari this weekend.
Well,
or they're saying this to, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit misleading, if you know what I mean. Maybe they have major problems and they're trying to...
Their pace. They're clearly quick.
I don't doubt their pace. I doubt their reliability at the moment.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
So whether or not they're saying this in, you know, all earnest, they actually did have an unprecedented problem that shouldn't happen again, or they're trying to mask the fact they do have some more serious reliability concerns.
No, but then, I don't know, you can argue it both ways, right? Unprecedented problem.
Mm.
Why is it unprecedented? Why did you have no idea that this problem could occur?
Well, it could be a very, very little chance of ever happening kind of thing, or it could be that they're trying something weird.
Yeah, who knows?
Hard to say. So, apparently, Gasly has a reason why he hasn't been quite up to scratch in the Red Bull. He says that he needs to get a lot better with the Red Bull setup direction. So, week by week, he's struggling to find him and his team are struggling to find kind of where they need to be focusing week by week. And he's feeling kind of left in the lurch by that, by not having a way to go week by week.
Fair enough.
Do you buy this, or are we going to see Gasly out of that seat by the end of the year? I'm putting you to the test, Raj. We're two races in. Make a call.
I know Gasly's junior career. I know that he's a quick driver. So, yeah, I believe that it could be a setup issue. Do I believe that he will get over said issue? I don't know. Mm.
That's why we're here, Raj, to speculate.
Okay, well, I think he will get over it. I think he'll make it work. And I reckon he will outperform Verstappen at some races this year.
I think he will if he can perform in qualifying. I think his Saturday is way off.
Yeah.
I think his race is okay. He just needs to get further up the grid, because otherwise he's constantly battling where he shouldn't be, essentially.
As he said, the issues come with the fact that he doesn't have a proper setup for the car. If he could set the car up properly, all of his other problems would kind of fade away. Mm. So it's all centered around the fact that he can't balance that car out properly. So as long as he learns to trim the car, I don't think there'll be an issue there.
Fair enough.
Alrighty. So how, quote, spoiled Ricciardo got a reality check. Mm. So after qualifying for the Bahrain Grand Prix, Nico Hülkenberg said that Renault teammate Daniel Ricciardo's feedback comes from a spoiled kind of better car starting point. It was a light-hearted comment rather than a dig, made in response to a question about Ricciardo feeling that the car wasn't perfect over the bumps, but Hülkenberg's words encapsulate an irrefutable truth. And that truth is basically that the evidence so far suggests that adapting to life in the midfield has been rather more difficult than anticipated. Hence the decision to take part in this week's Bahrain test. Ricciardo came out and said, "I knew it would take time, but in my heart, I guess I just expected to jump right in the car and it'd all be sweet. But it's no secret that we're not on the same pace as the car I had last year. I guess that's something I need to figure out."
I think he's really struggling. I mean, the thing is, he's been with Red Bull so long. He's seen the development of Red Bull, you know, firsthand. So he's got, like, every time that car makes any kind of improvement, he knows where it's going. He's had an input on that. And all of a sudden, he's in a car that's kind of just, like, appeared in front of him, essentially. It's very foreign to him. Although it's a Formula One car, that thing is very different. We've seen, you know, his late braking style doesn't just convert straight away to this Renault.
It doesn't translate.
It might never come back the same way. No. It's just a reality of the fact of him moving the way he has. It's a scary thought. And I mean, maybe if Ricciardo had made this move, you know, this was his third team in Formula One, his fourth team in Formula One, you know, outside the Red Bull family, this wouldn't have been as big of an issue. But he's been in that Red Bull family for what, you know, 7, 8, 9 seasons or something. It's not an easy transition.
Mm. It's the only car he's been in, right? But when he started in Formula One, he was in dogs of cars, like the HRT, the Hispania Racing
Team.
This
is so long ago, though.
It was so long ago. Yeah, exactly. And so for the last few years, he's just been used to a car that was incredibly supple over the curbs and could just ride
and
everything
set up for
nicely.
Him. You know, he's been the number one driver there for quite some time. It's designed for him and one other person, really. So he has a lot of say in the way that car performs.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. Last year, he was becoming not the number one driver. So.
Sure, but still, they take into account Daniel Ricciardo when it comes to doing certain changes.
For sure they do. And yeah, that's the problem, is this car is essentially the main issue with this car is that it doesn't ride the curbs well at all.
Mm.
And so when he hits the curbs, the car is essentially unbalanced entirely. It throws off the aero balance of the car massively. And so he can't brake as late as he used to. He can't attack the corners the way he wants to. As Hülkenberg said, he's kind of spoiled because he was used to a car doing exactly what he wanted it to do exactly when he demanded it. So yeah,
he's come out and he said he's willing to work with it, and he needs to get rid of some of the old habits as well. I think the way he's been driving that car, he's not used to the fact that it's not a Red Bull anymore. He needs to change things, and we will get there. I just think this season is, for a Daniel Ricciardo fan, going to be a really tough one.
It's going to be a long one.
It's going to be a very long season if all you're in it for is Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah,
we should
indeed.
Check out that Facebook group I don't like. See how they're reacting.
Oh God.
That's a throwback to like episode 30 or something.
Daniel Ricciardo fan page, isn't it?
Look, I'm sure there are great people on that page. I was just a member of it for like 6 hours and it was a nightmare. So, you know, we're not going to go there. Listen to episode 32 or whatever it is. I had a rant.
Indeed. Let's not get into Braden's politics. No, that's another podcast altogether.
Right, I'm doing the button again. So, Raj, the Dutch Grand Prix is taking a turn, it seems.
For the worse?
For the maybe, I'm going to say.
Okay.
So, Assen is throwing their hat into the ring to be chasing the Dutch Grand Prix deal as Zandvoort's exclusivity in talks ends.
Assen,
what did I say?
Assen.
Sorry. I was making an Assen of myself. according to the designated promoter of the F1 race at the legendary MotoGP track, everything is in place to sign a contract for 2020 if Zandvoort is not able to seal a deal.
Right.
Apparently, I was reading some comment on Reddit, so take this with a massive grain of salt. Some guy was like, I live there, and the place that I work is a hotel very close to that track, and Formula One organizers have booked it out for an entire month for next year. Interesting. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. If it is, it might not mean anything necessarily. It might just be them saying, if we ever get this done, we're going to need accommodation, book it now, and we'll cancel later if need be. Or it could be total bullshit because that's just some guy called, like, you know, Pickle Dicks on Reddit or some shit.
Or it could be where they're going for the goddamn Christmas party.
It could be anything. It could be anything. Anyway, I don't know. I think there is some... I mean, the fact that the Zandvoort exclusivity talks period has ended is true. Whether or not Assen is a realistic kind of replacement if Zandvoort wasn't to go through. I think Zandvoort is still the logical option and the one that Liberty and Formula One will be chasing most likely.
I think, like, it has way more heritage in our sport.
Yeah.
Which is why I think Formula One would want it more. That being said, it would also be a very difficult track to overtake on. As good as the circuit is, especially for the drivers, especially in a game, I don't know if that's going to translate to TV very well. So I'm not sure if Assen would actually be a better choice for Formula One racing. It might actually prove to be. So
it depends. I mean, yeah, Zandvoort was given the preference over Assen. The exclusivity period to help Zandvoort find necessary funding and things like that. So they're obviously putting all their eggs in that basket. But if they don't come through, they have a few kind of backup plans.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to think that this could be as early as 2020.
Yeah.
All these talks will eventually come to a head.
For sure. All right, so Mick Schumacher has come out and said he's unsure he'd be ready for Formula One in 2020.
Isn't he like 9?
I was about to say, like, dude, just grow pubes first.
He's so young. He's like driven a test. I mean, sure, of course he's going to get those questions. He's a Schumacher.
Yeah.
But how old is he? He's like 18?
19, something 19. Like that. Yeah.
I mean, yes, it can be done. Verstappen has set a precedent. Doesn't mean it necessarily should. You know, Ferrari, I mean, he's not going to get a Ferrari seat straight away, but they're not going to fuck it up and put him in too early and destroy what would be the biggest coup for them if they could get a performing Schumacher in one of their cars.
Yeah.
There's no way they fuck that up.
But at the end of the day, Schumacher's come out and said some very Schumacher-like things.
Okay.
Because he says he's not ready. If he's not ready, he's not going to make the move, essentially.
Okay.
He'll continue to gain F1 experience wherever he can. Again, he tested in Bahrain last week for Ferrari and Alfa Romeo. But yeah, Schumacher, he approached the test basically to enjoy it and apparently did that 110%, especially in the quicker runs at the end of the day. He admitted that he found it really hard to kind of find the limit under braking and understood there were improvements to be made and hoped to use his F1 experience to help his F2 season. So the limit is further and further into the corner. I was feeling like I could even break at the 50-meter board at turn one, but obviously that's impossible. I was trying to go
later. Everyone has to make that mistake at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, you don't know the limit until you fly off it, and then you go, okay, that was it. That was just it there. Before that is where I need to do it.
Yeah, exactly. He's essentially learned what every driver learns when they get to F1, which is F1 is so complex. There's so many ways to see it through and learn about the car. I think he's taking it slowly and very methodically and very, as I said, Schumacher-like-y.
Yeah, okay. That's not a word, but I'll give it to you.
Sure.
Raj, did you see the McLaren has revealed Fernando Alonso's car for the 2019 Indianapolis 500?
I have. It looks sweet.
It looks very cool. It is sporting a very similar livery to the Formula One team. It looks like a... It looks like a Formula One car if you gave it to like a kid and you're like, hey, draw this from memory, and then took the car away. And it's kind of a little more simple, a bit more basic, got a weird little, like a couple of weird little additions, but it looks very cool.
Yeah, it's kind of true, actually.
It's a simplified version of, you know what I mean? Mm. It's as if someone took the Formula One car and said, I could make one of them in my garage.
Mm.
And they're like, yeah, it's close. Like, yeah, all right, cool. But anyway. I don't know.
Essentially, it's... I'll take an F1 car and remove basically all of the downforce.
All the little knobs and dingle-dangles off the side and stuff.
All the knobs. Yeah, it is a beautifully clean-looking car.
Knobs and dingle-dangles is the name of this episode, by the way.
Knobs and dingle-dangles, yeah. Done.
Raj, moving on.
Dingle-dangle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay, so... Red Bull is confident in having an aero fix, basically, for their car by the Spanish Grand Prix. So, if you guys don't know, Red Bull has been struggling recently with their balance, especially in Bahrain. They couldn't, as Gasly has said repeatedly, I cannot find a proper balance for this car. Verstappen really was driving through the issues that that car was throwing at him. And yeah, Red Bull is confident that it'll have a fix for its aerodynamic issues by the Formula One Spanish Grand Prix at the latest, following some encouraging results at testing in Bahrain. So a challenging Bahrain Grand Prix meant Red Bull could not challenge Mercedes or Ferrari, with Max Verstappen a distant fourth and teammate Pierre Gasly in eighth. So Red Bull notes that it's RB, what is it up to now? RB15? Has a very, very tricky kind of handling window. It's very, very narrow. And so they know their car can perform optimally. The problem is that window is tiny.
Mm.
And so they're slipping out of it more often than not. So they need to find a way to essentially make that window a little bit larger. They think they have already solved it in the Bahrain testing, and they think they're going to have the solutions on track by Spain. So, let's see.
We'll see. Raj, how many more stories do you have?
A few.
I've got to get you to go through them. We've got a lot to get through.
Uh-huh. Alrighty. So, Nico Hülkenberg's come out and said the Renault 2019 F1 car has similar problems to its 2018 car. The French manufacturer has targeted fourth in the Constructors' Championship, and to make it a very convincing fourth. However, at the start of 2019, Renault has struggled to establish itself as best of the rest, again because of poor reliability, and it's only left with 6 points after two races from Hülkenberg's singular seventh-place finish in the season opener. Asked by Autosport if Renault had improved in some key areas in this season or still has some of its old weaknesses, Hülkenberg said, "We've improved a lot on a couple of things, and I definitely think... the engine has improved a lot over the winter. Obviously, in Bahrain, we had a problem with that, but I think that was a special case. The engine side has improved quite a lot. I think car and chassis, aero-wise, we've worked over the winter, but we're still having problems. So I feel that's where we really need to focus and come up with something better." Hülkenberg is saying what we all thought. Renault is underperforming. And it's not because of the engine, apparently.
Okay. Interesting.
I don't believe that. Yes, anyway.
Keep going.
Yes, keep going. Anyhow, Red Bull does see potential for free gains through Honda through packaging. So they already feel like they've got a lot more performance out of this, but they feel like they can get more of it for free just by improving the packaging of the power unit in the car. And Rob Marshall, who's Red Bull's chief engineering officer, came out and said, "We can see areas around the power unit to focus on packaging wise. They aren't necessarily big bits, but there are probably 4 or 5 areas where we think if we could change that, that would be better." So very, very small kind of packaging issues that would affect the car aerodynamically quite dramatically.
Mm.
So, yeah, All right, look, it's looking good for Red Bull this year if they can sort out some of their, weirdly enough, their chassis issues are what.
Yeah, we were so worried about the other end of it that we forgot to think, oh my God, they might actually have some issues there. They never do.
No, they never do.
But well, anyway, we'll see.
Yep.
Raj, any more stories?
Yes, actually, one more, all which right. is kind of big. Two more. Sorry.
Okay.
Toro Rosso's come out and explained how F1 rookie Alexander Albon has impressed. So you guys have probably heard me going on and on about Alex Albon and how good I think he is. But Albon, who had not driven an F1 car until the shakedown of the STR13 in February, has out-qualified teammate Daniel Kvyat in both races. In the Bahrain Grand Prix, he scored his first points with a ninth place finish, despite being boxed out at the start. He recovered by overtaking Alfa Romeo's Kimi Raikkonen, Kvyat, and the Haas of Kevin Magnussen on his way to a points return. And Toss told Autosport, "We've been positively impressed from the first test onwards." Wow, sounds really posh. he's really doing a good job, and I must say, if he continues like this, he will become a very successful F1 driver. His strengths, though, are with car control. So that's a good thing for your boss to say to you. He believes that your car control is probably your greatest strength.
That is not a bad thing to hear as a driver.
It's not a bad thing. Okay, last story. Here we go. So following other F1 cars is now easier, says Alfa Romeo's Kimi Raikkonen. So Kimi Raikkonen reckons that the rule changes brought in for 2019 have made it easier for Formula 1 cars to follow each other.
I just saw they're saying there will be some tracks this year that are going to see up to 50% increase in passing
from simulations. Okay, we'll see if that comes true. But anyway, despite having a pace advantage over Norris in the last race, in the final kind of stages, he couldn't make it pass. Anyway, he came out and said he explained that the aerodynamic changes brought on for this year, introducing a simpler front end plates, the wider front wings and so on, were helping the drivers. He said, yeah, I think it's more close, but exits are still tricky, but you can get more close at the end of the corners and stuff like that. We can get closer. Overtaking is still difficult, but I think it gives us a bit more of a chance. And Lewis Hamilton came out and said, I think it's still rubbish.
Lewis Hamilton, I don't know. He's normally at the front anyway, so what does he have to worry?
Yeah, I know, right?
Anyway, Raj, we're going to have to talk about the Shanghai Chinese Grand Prix because this is going to be a long episode.
Let's do it.
Alrighty, Raj. 1,000. It's a big number. That's how many Grand Prix there have been after this weekend.
Indeed.
The Shanghai Grand Prix, or the Chinese Grand Prix, or pronounced in its native tongue, I'm going to have an attempt at this, the Zhonggao Daijiangsai, that's probably incorrect, is a round of the Formula One Championship held at the Shanghai International Circuit. It was actually fun. There's a lot of fun facts about this track, actually. So I'm going to go through a couple of cool fun facts I've learned.
I'm just going to go across one fun fact. That Chinese pronunciation you just said, you said, I hope your mother comes
you
across a particularly sexually aggressive panda.
Okay. We will have to confirm that with someone who understood what I said. No one understood what I said, so what am I talking about? It was completed in 2014, the circuit, and was the most expensive Formula One circuit facility, costing $240 million to construct. Abu Dhabi, however, did overtake that a little bit later when they spent $6 billion to open theirs. It's a little different.
Are you kidding me?
That's the facts, Raj. Years later, but, you know, still, inflation doesn't take that much. The track is 5.45 kilometers long and features one of the trickiest corner combinations in Formula One history, according to most drivers. Designed, of course, by Tilke, it has one of the most dramatic turns with a 270-degree turn around turn one and two.
One of my favorite corners in Formula One.
It was originally planned to open in 1999, however, it was delayed several years as the Chinese government had to eventually step in and ask for assistance from the Macau Grand Prix guys to help get it sorted for 2004. But it's been running ever since.
And Fair enough.
it has had some very interesting little bits and pieces. Fernando Alonso secured his championship there for Renault, because for a while it was the last race of the season.
Indeed.
The Chinese Grand Prix that was won in 2006 by Michael Schumacher is his last victory in Formula One. So a lot of kind of cool little tidbits that the Chinese Grand Prix gets to hold. Last year was won, of course, by our very own Daniel Ricciardo. However, who do you think holds the most wins at this circuit? With five, I'll tell you that much.
With five?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go Sebastian Vettel because I think it would be a wise choice.
No, it's actually Lewis Hamilton.
Hey.
Sebastian Vettel has only won once.
Wow, really?
Yeah, in 2009.
There you go.
It has not been necessarily a great Red Bull kind of track. They've only won last year and then 2009.
Yeah, right.
But otherwise, a lot of Mercedes wins, a fair few McLarens, and then earlier back in the day, Ferrari and Renault. Anyway, let me just keep going here. Raj, first of all, we have to do our predictions. Oh, wait, no. Before we do the predictions, the one question I ask every week, Shanghai International Circuit, where does it rank in terms of your favorite tracks of the year?
Up high.
Yeah, I like
high.
It too.
It produces, you know, pretty much good racing year by year. I don't think I've seen a race there recently that's been bad.
I can't think of too many. Yeah, especially last year was a great race. A lot of action.
A lot of action.
Predictions though. Who do you have? Oh, come on, Raj. Oh, actually, one more fun fact which I learned. Alfa Romeo will be the only name in Formula One to have raced in both the first Grand Prix and the 1000th. Ferrari can't claim that.
Yeah, amazing.
Only Alfa Romeo.
Nice.
And then only just because they just got their name back in this year.
Yeah.
Anyway, my prediction for the winner is Leclerc.
For the winner, not the pole sitter.
Well, I'll get to pole. Winning, Leclerc. Second place, Hamilton. And third place, Vettel.
Okay.
What do you have, Raj?
I'm going to go the same. Leclerc for the win.
Yeah.
But Hamilton is going to get beaten out by Vettel this week.
Yeah, okay.
Because he's, you know, he has retard moments every now and then. I think he had his in Bahrain. I think he will drive quickly now for a while.
Sure.
I believe it'll be Leclerc, then Vettel, and then, no, you know what? Leclerc, Vettel, fine, Hamilton.
Okay, so just similar but different order. For pole position, I actually put Vettel.
I'm going to go Leclerc again.
Cool. Alrighty. And fastest lap. This one's more of a gamble. You don't know how the race is going to turn out, so hard to predict fastest lap.
Valtteri Bottas.
Bottas. I've gone with... who did I go? Hamilton.
Okay.
I've gone with Lewis Hamilton. Number of DNFs.
Will be three.
Ooh, a lot of people not finishing the 1,000th race.
Mm.
I'm going to go with two.
Okay.
Quickly, the ones that don't count for points, but we like talking about them. Will it be better than last year in terms of action?
I said
I'm going to say no. Last year was a lot of stuff going on.
Mm.
And especially Ricciardo winning on a weird strategy, Verstappen hitting guys with his craziness. There's so much stuff going on.
Find me the weather forecast, if you don't mind.
Okay. Shanghai weather. We are speaking quite a few days out, so this might change. It's raining right now in China as we speak. On the race day for Sunday, it is looking like a fairly low chance of precipitation, only 20%, but quite early in the day is that kind of chance. It'll be moderate temperatures of around 21 degrees and slightly overcast.
Mm. Okay, you know what? I'm going to go...
This doesn't count for points. You can just guess.
No.
Okay. And for your crack predictions?
For my crack prediction, I reckon... is this even really a crack prediction? I feel like it is now, unfortunately. Both Renaults will finish the race in the points.
Both Renaults, 4 points. Okay, I'll take that. That's kind of crazy at this point. I've said F1 to dramatically fail when it comes to 1,000th race celebrations. I don't know what form that'll take, but I think we'll be talking about it. Some sort of weird fuck-up with the fact they're celebrating.
Oh, God, the dragon, which is supposed to look like it's on fire, is actually on fire.
I don't know. Something weird like that will go... I don't know. Something will go pear-shaped, and that's all I'm going to say. Raj, before we finish the episode, of course, we alluded to it earlier in the show. We have an interview here with Betty Klemenko. owner slash team manager and all-round amazing V8 supercar representative. Raj, in one word, how would you describe this interview I'm about to share with our listeners?
Amazing, but I might be a little biased.
Fair enough. We hope you enjoy. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the show.
Indeed.
Alrighty, Raj. We are joined here, not in the studio, but on the phone by a very special guest.
Betty Klemenko, who is the team boss of Erebus Motorsport, now known as Penrite Racing. And yeah, otherwise, yeah. How would you describe yourself, Betty, really?
First off, it's still Erebus Motorsport. It's just the team is known as Penrite Racing. I got to put that in there.
Fair enough.
But not myself. I decided at a very late age to get involved in motorsport, and I'm just loving every minute. I'm like the grandmother of motorsport.
That's a good tagline.
That is your title now, actually. Yeah, that's awesome. The grandmother of motorsport.
I was thinking of mother of motorsport, but it sounds too much like mother of dragons.
Fair enough. Because you brought up the Erebus name already, we will ask this question. Erebus, of course, means Greek goddess of darkness. Was that
god.
On that the Greek god of darkness? Sorry.
Yes.
Was this reference as deep as dark as it's like we're interpreting it as? Is that coming from you,
well,
or is that just our interpretation?
Erebus was kind of when there was nothing here, and then you had the Big Bang, and his daughter Nyx came and put light into the world, and I just saw motorsport as having a big void open for any woman who wanted to go in there and give it a shot.
Yeah, that's very
fitting. And I named my first car Nyx.
That's genuinely beautiful, actually. Wow.
Well, I name all my cars.
Fair enough. How many cars do you have?
Well, all my cars that are racing, like Dave's car is called Luna.
Right.
Anton's was Jupiter, and then we changed something in the paneling, so we now call it the Jupiter 2.
Very good. Okay, cool. So is there this? Where did this obsession with Greek mythology come from?
Well, it was not just Greek, but I mean, we started off. I think because I looked at Erebus, my son and I found it online, and then we just, even in GTs, we used Norse gods, and the transporter was Olympus, and the cars were, I just had so many different names for them. And when I moved to V8s, I thought, well, I'm going to keep going. And I think one of the cars was Thor, and there was another one called Loki. And it's always written on the back of the seat.
Right. It's kind of stuck, a tradition that seemingly stuck. Fair enough.
Well, I think Dave's is really good because I think it was... someone came along and wrote with chalk on it, a tick, so it was lunatic.
That's pretty good.
Oh, that's perfect, actually. Yeah.
Speaking of traditions, we have a little bit of a word association game we play with some of our guests here on Backmarker Podcast. And if you wouldn't mind, we have a handful of motorsport related terms and names and things like that. And we're just hoping for the first word that pops into your head as we go through these.
That'd be cool.
I'll start with one here and then Raj, you follow up. First of all, Bathurst.
Win.
Championship.
Dave.
David.
Me.
Anton.
Fruit.
Ooh.
No, his parents. Parents grow fruit and vegetables.
Fair enough.
Not because he's a fruit.
Yeah. That might have come out a little bit wrong.
Okay,
there,
you
Betty.
Said the first word. I'm not going to think of a suitable one.
You're playing the game perfectly. What about Holden?
Great.
Ford.
Good.
Parody?
Nothing.
Oh, Nothing. Lord. Formula One.
Yeah,
fair enough.
IndyCar?
Love it.
Nice. And finally, the big brother of supercars, if you will, NASCAR.
Oh, my friggin' God. I went to Daytona. I love it.
Ooh, okay, next time you go, take me with you.
I want to tell her, what's his name?
Talladega.
Talladega's my next one.
All right.
I want to get the flannel out.
Of course, the first one we brought up with you with Bathurst. So, I mean, asking this question almost seems unnecessary, but what would be your greatest moment of racing to date?
Both Bathurst wins.
Both of
the Bathurst 1000 first and then the 12-hour second.
Nice.
And I guess on the other end of the scale, what would be maybe the hardest or the one you're most likely to forget as a moment in motorsport for you?
Well, actually, it was in GTs, and Macau had been won by this one guy for years, and we were coming first, and two laps from the end, we got a flat tire, and Mauro Engel was driving the SLS, and it just gutted me. Absolutely gutted me.
No, that would be killer, especially as hard as Macau is. That must have been awful.
It was. I wanted to walk away, but my husband grabbed me by the back of the collar and said, "You stand here and you just be you.
You just suck it up." Fair enough.
Well, I wasn't going to say it that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can. This is Backmarker Podcast, really. But yeah, anyway, having come to supercars from GT3 racing, as you've mentioned a few times, what are your thoughts on the current playing field of Australian GT racing as it is?
I think it's lost a little bit of its shine. I love the category. I would love to go back in it, but I just haven't found a car that I really want to put out there. And my husband really takes care of the GTs. But, you know, it's really it's more of a family-related thing. It's a whole different kettle of fish to V8s.
It is.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so here we go. Do you have any plans to actually enter your team into the Bathurst 12-hour next year? Speaking of what you just spoke about, can you find a car that you do want to race? Do you want to get back into it?
You know what? Toss a coin, because if I can find a car between now and then, and I'm not putting, you know, sometimes you find the weirdest things in the weirdest parts of your garage.
That's fair enough. And also, do you need an amateur driver? Because I can offer my, you know, skills. And also, we can have, you know, this kind of marketing label, the first ever racer with multiple sclerosis racing in the Bathurst 12-hour. I think it'd be cool. I think it would be cool.
It would be cool. And if I find a spare car, we'll make a list.
Yeah, you've got our number. You've got our number.
Done. I've got your number.
Awesome.
Question from, like, as a Formula One podcast, and we talk about Formula One week in, week out, we're very familiar with the Parc Fermé conditions or the rules around that. And, of course, supercars have had that very recently in Tasmania, trialed out. What was your take on that in the previous weekend? Does it change too much?
The guys, no, it didn't change. It wasn't a big change for us. You know, Parc Fermé is Parc Fermé. You know, if it lasts 10 minutes or 2 hours, it makes no difference.
So you don't mind that if that becomes a permanent addition moving forward? It wouldn't affect you, right?
I would prefer it to stay as it is before now, but look, they're always changing everything. So give it time, it'll all come around again.
Fair enough.
Anyway, but now that you guys are getting support, I'm doing air quotes, by the way, now, so you're just going to have to imagine the air quotes, but getting support from Holden, do you want to see the Camaro in the next generation of cars, especially with the arrival of the Mustang?
Yeah, I've got a theory about all of that. You know, like when the ZB came in and now the Mustangs come in, they all get their new toys and it's like all the toys come out of the box exactly the same. And then, you know, give it a little while and, you know, people tinker with them and they play with them and they set them up differently. And, you know, give it 6 months and I think there'll be a really good balance. Everything will balance itself out. You know, if they bring it, I'm just getting used to the ZB and I just got used to Holden. So I'm happy to stay as we are for a while. Let's just concentrate on doing what we do best, and that's racing. If we keep changing every 5 minutes, the stories will only be about this car's better than that car and it's faster or it's slower or there's no parity. Let's just forget about all that for a while and just go racing.
Yeah.
I like it.
You know what? You should be the, first of all, the Prime Minister, but second of all, in charge of V8 supercars.
I think every time I now see an article about, the issues we're having with, you know, Ford Mustang, quote-unquote, you know, destroying the field of supercars and all that, I'm just going to refer them to that comment there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, that's exactly how I feel. So I've never really been outspoken about it.
Oh. Mm. Oh, we appreciate the honest take on it all.
Yeah, we definitely do. But anyhow, so TCR is starting in Australia soon. I don't know if you've been following it or whatever, but would you have any dramas with either Anton or Davey jumping into an Alfa or Honda or Hyundai or Renault or Audi or Ford or Subaru?
No, not really.
No? Okay. No. That was a little dim.
As long as they've got their helmets on, I don't care.
Fair enough. As long as they've got their helmets on.
Let them race.
Let them race. Oh, God. Now you've tempted Davey.
What draws the line in terms of, you know, at a certain point?
There is a line. I don't like... I actually did draw the line once. I don't like prototypes.
Okay.
Things that are not... Yeah, you know, like, oh, we just invented a brand new car that goes racing and, you know, open wheeler. And I'm going, looking, shaking my head going, no.
Okay, so as long as someone else has done it first, then they can put their helmets on and give it a shot.
Yeah, you know.
Fair call. That's a fair call. I mean, would you want to put your racing driver in some potential bomb? I mean, that's not the best idea.
You know, my team's called Erebus, not Crash Rate Dummies or whatever it's called.
Yeah, true that. Fair enough. Anyhow, what will it take for Penrite Racing to challenge for the championship? Does the fact that you're called Penrite Racing have anything to do with your championship ambitions, or should it tell us how serious you are about stepping up a rung in this sport?
Look, we've always been in it for the championship. The fact it's now called Penrite Racing is because Penrite has just upped their ante. And you know what? I built my brand. I built Erebus. I don't need to... It's still on the back wing. And, you know, people know what Erebus is. And if we can get more sponsorship and have the team name, you know, bought, then that's the way it goes. But we still run everything. You know, it's got nothing to do. Penrite, I tell you what, for them to have been around for so long with us is just a testament to how good they are with us.
Sure.
And, you know, they let us do what we do best, and that's race.
Because you brought up the Penrite sponsorship, I will say over the last few years, I think you guys in the Erebus team have had some of the sweetest liveries in supercars. Favourites of mine.
I don't like the shiny bits.
Right. I love the shiny bits. But
yeah, I'm not a gold person. That's the problem. I don't like yellow gold. I like white gold. But you know what? It looks good. It looks great on TV, and that's what counts.
What year of livery would you say has been your favourite as a team owner?
Oh, God. I'm going to be very, very good and say all of them.
Okay. That's fair enough.
I actually like... I don't know if you remember when I had the Mercs. I had the year that one looked like Tron.
Yes, I have seen that.
Yeah, that was my favourite. I want to do that on a car, but unfortunately, Penrite just won't go to blue.
Fair enough. Raj, do you have any more? I've got one more day.
No, I think I'm just going to cap it off with this final one here. As a team owner in the world of supercars, and hey, the only female team owner in the world of supercars, which is a big freaking thing. Is there some low-hanging fruit or any unexplored avenues that Sean Seamer should be aware of? The CEO of Supercars, by the way, to anyone who doesn't know who Sean Seamer is. But, yeah, is there any low-hanging fruit out there that he should be taking advantage of?
That's a tricky question. I got to be really delicate, which is not my forte. I really am not a delicate person.
Don't have to be delicate. It's us.
Well, I'm not delicate. Ask me in a different way.
Okay.
Ask the same question in a different
way. All right. If there was, say, you know, one easy thing to put on the grid, one track to quickly add to the calendar, you know, little things like that that could be explored by supercars, what would be at the top of your list?
Of my list? God, my list is too long.
Or your favourite things that come to mind. Not necessarily putting it on the CEO of supercars.
Consistency. I think consistency.
Okay.
You know, the Australians love consistency. They like to know that the race is going to be there. I tell you what it is. Play the bloody anthem at every single round.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, that's a very easy one.
Yeah, but it's my big thing. I already told them once when they tried to stop it. I said, if you stop it, I will take a speaker out onto the grid with a microphone, and I've got a voice like a frog, and I will sing it myself.
Oh, no. Come
and
on, Betty.
Since then, they have played it at every round.
All right. Well, that's one way to get things done.
Except Tasmania. I was very disappointed.
Except why? Why? I mean, Tasmania is Australia too. Tasmania. Come on.
But I did stand on. I did stand in pit lane and sing it. And then one of my crew came and joined me, so I wasn't by myself, looking like an absolute idiot.
Hold up, though. What about the Auckland round of the championship? Do you think the Kiwi national anthem should be played or the Aussie national anthem?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think both.
I think they do play the Kiwi first,
and then the Australian.
Yeah. No. Okay. That sounds good to me. Again.
Oh, I have one more question.
Prime Minister.
Speaking of, you know, the Australian patriotic kind of flair in you, as well as New Zealand, most of the drivers who have raced for Erebus, except I believe Mario Engel, have all been from either Australia or New Zealand. If you could choose one driver from anywhere in the world, any racing series, to add to your roster, who would it be?
Can we pretend that he's kind of like 20 years younger?
Yeah, any era. I'll even let you have any era.
Yeah.
Button.
Ah, that's an interesting one. Ooh. Jenson Button. What is that? Is that for his driving skills or his personality?
Or something
else?
I
think he would be a really cool guy to deal with, and I think his driving skills were amazing. I just don't think that he ever got to the very top of what he could do.
No. I agree.
I think both me and Raj, on many episodes of this podcast, have sung his praises.
Any F1 fan in the world will agree with you there. One of the most underrated drivers in history.
And he's very tall, because I actually met him at the toaster at the hotel. And I didn't know who he was, because I was actually only up to his waist or something. We were having a full-on discussion about toast and how toasters should work properly.
That is... I'm very jealous of this conversation, not being a fly on the wall for that conversation.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much for being with us on the show for this chat. We hope to maybe have a chat with you again one day in the future after a nice Erebus win.
Oh, anytime.
Anytime. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Oh, geez, we should probably mention that Erebus did have a very, very good weekend
of course,
Tasmania over
the
weekend.
We'll start a tradition
except for poor Anton.
Yeah, I mean, in his own hand. Yeah, no.
Well, he is left-handed.
Oh, yeah?
you know, his left hand's probably a little stronger than his right.
Yeah, okay.
Fair enough. Alrighty. We will end it on that.
Or also, invest in some Loctite. Jeez.
Sorry?
Invest in some Loctite. Come on now.
Well, I was thinking just to get a couple of... cable ties, you know, they always work well.
Yeah. Yep. Cable ties and duct tape.
Agreed.
Yep. Always works. And it's great for dresses.
Fair enough.
Good God.
Thank you so much.
An amazing guest, Betty. Thank you for coming on.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Alrighty, Raj. Not that we're going to be able to topple that interview, but we have been Back Michael Podcast. We can find us on backmarketpodcast.com, backmarketpodcast on Facebook, backmarketpod on Twitter.
Indeed.
But then backmarketpodcast again on Instagram.
Just to make it simple, guys, like, again.
Just go to the website. All there.
Yeah, go to our website. God, do we have to do everything for you guys? Jeez.
Again, not that it'll top our interview just there, but we do have a special piece of Kimi Räikkönen poetry to round out the show. But before I let you do that, I'm going to quickly ask if you enjoyed this episode or any of the episodes of Backmarket Podcast, I'm going to take this opportunity, if you have even just a moment of time, if you could please jump onto your Apple Podcasts or your Spotify or your Podbeans or wherever you listen to us, give us a review. I would really, really appreciate it. It goes a really long way to help us promote the podcast. And the more listeners we have, the better it feels when we get to look at our numbers.
Indeed. And the more listeners we have, the more interviews like that incredible interview you just listened to, we can do for you.
Exactly. We really appreciate that. So if you have a moment, we'd love that. But Raj, round out the show. What is this poem called?
Helmets are special. So I wipe it so that I can...
Don't do the voice.
I'm doing the voice. I'm doing
you
the
don't
voice.
Don't sound like Kimi Räikkönen.
Okay, fine. I'll do it. Let's start again. I wipe it so that I can see better. It protects my head.
We've been back like a podcast.
Yes, we have.
Protect your head.
Protect your head. Ooh.